Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
All right, you're very welcome back. As ever, if you want to get in touch with us, you can tweet the show at Off the Ball. You can follow us on facebook.com/Off the Ball. We'll get more from Will about the football in a couple of minutes' time. And we'll also bring you up to date on what's going on in the golf. Just a reminder, Off the Ball's live and exclusive Premier League coverage returns on Sunday. First up, we're at St James's Park for the meeting of newly promoted Newcastle and last season's runners-up Spurs. Pat Nevin is on commentary duty alongside Ian Beach. After that, to Old Trafford for Manchester United against West Ham with Nathan and Kev. Now, for all you fans of the Sunday paper review, don't worry. You'll still be able to get your helping every Sunday afternoon on newstalk.com. The podcast should be online sometime before 2 o'clock and follow our social accounts as well for details of that. The paper reviewers this week, Foley's, Kleena and Mick are going to join Joe in studio for this week's edition. We'll also have Tommy Walsh at that All-Ireland hurling semi-final between Cork and Waterford in Croke Park. Himself and Oisin will be doing a Facebook Live pre-game. And before all that, our Saturday panel is going to feature Michael Meehan, Kieran Hughes and Mickey Burke talking about their championship summers. Kev is going to be on throughout the afternoon chatting about the events in the Premier League as they unfold. And we'll also be speaking to Mayo's Paddy Durkin ahead of that Mayo-Kerry clash on Sunday week, live on both days from 1 o'clock. And now, though, obviously, the other big story of the weekend that we're going to be covering in detail as it unfolds will happen on Sunday. It's a bit more of this.
There was no percent side. Muldoon once more gets her hands on the goal! Larissa Muldoon for Ireland scores the first try in the game.
Onside, onside!
The substitutes, Griffin! Griffin's there! Ireland have scored and struck down. Muldoon to Spence, Sophie Spence for the corner! Is she dead? Ireland offside, the fan is playing a try! Australia have struck back! And this is not over yet. For chat from both teams who've given everything in the opening game. It hasn't been flawless by either side, but it's been full of passion, guts, and the glory. It looks like we're going to earn it. We've got 80 minutes. If Muldoon puts it out, if Stapleton puts it out, Ireland have beaten Australia and they'll have their opening win.
Yeah, a little bit of history made, an Irish win on Irish soil in the World Cup. Lynn Cantwell is on the line to help us make sense of everything that has happened and hopefully make sense of what's about to happen. Lynn, how are you doing?
Hi, Ger, how are you doing?
Yeah, pretty good. So they don't make it easy on themselves. It would have been nice to just ease into the tournament with a routine victory, but I guess maybe in retrospect, coming through a match like that is really good for a group and for a team just to kind of remind themselves that this isn't going to be that straightforward and actually, you know what, they have a bit to work on.
Yeah, exactly. They started in dramatic style, didn't they? Capture everybody's attention. No, you're right. Look, it was a tough game, and I think the difficult thing about a game like that is that nobody knew what the Australians were going to produce. There's lots of stuff in the papers and the build-up about them being underprepared. You know, they've only had five test series since the last World Cup in 3 years. That's, you know, a huge disadvantage from their point of view. And Ireland have had a pump of resources, etc. You know, we know that they've been playing well, so they're obviously hot favourites. But ultimately, Australia have the potential to be very good. They're an excellent sporting nation. They've got excellent rugby players. And what they produced on the day and the team they produced on the day was playing some serious tasty rugby, matched with Ireland probably feeling a little bit of pressure. They probably just didn't pull it together until the second half, and as a result of it was quite a tight game in the end.
Yeah, will you talk to us a bit about that pressure and what impact it might have? Because this is a team that was under the radar for ages, and then suddenly everybody started paying attention and they win a Grand Slam and it's like, holy, this is unbelievable. And then we get a World Cup. So everybody has kind of known about it for a long period of time. It's been a really, really long build-up. And, you know, it's not easy for anybody to kind of finally be there in the moment that everybody has been talking to you about for the last 2.5, 3 years.
Well, that's it, yeah. And you know, I suppose, I'm not really an excuses person at all. And I just think about, look, you have to have the ability to play what's in front of you on the day, and there's no excuse around that. However, the reality of it is that, you know, this is an amateur team. It's come a long way in a short period of time, and this is a serious high-pressure situation. Whatever about performing in Six Nations repeatedly and World Cups in the past in Marcoussi in 2014, you know, this is a host. You're hosting the World Cup. There's a lot of attention on you. There's been a lot of build-up, as you say, with the trophy tour, etc. So that has the potential to build pressure and therefore show itself from a tension point of view, which I think there was an element of that on Wednesday. It's not acceptable for that to be the reason that they underperform in the next game, for example, but there probably was a bit of that in the first half, definitely, on Wednesday night.
Yeah, so what would you be saying to them in the aftermath of that? Like, knowing the team the way you do, but also with your own interest in like performance, what is it that has to change from getting that performance out of the system to actually hitting your peak performance?
Yeah, like it's funny. Often you just need to play, and that's what they've done. So they've started the competition now, whether it's a rude awakening or what, or whether it's just the ability to say, okay, look, this is our most recent game. We have all of our stats. We know exactly where we're at. And based on that specific measure, let's move on to the next one. As opposed to, you know, when there's obviously a build-up and it gets a bit wishy-washy and your memories of when you played last become a little bit more faint. Whereas literally, they have Wednesday to go on. They all will, and as a collective, will want to improve objectively on where they were at. And that's probably the best thing to focus on.
Because some of the teams have actually been talking about the 3-day turnaround and how difficult it's going to be. And look, I absolutely, in terms of peak performance, it's not ideal. And yet for certain teams, like Ireland, the best thing might be to go back out there and play. Now, we haven't talked about their opponents. Japan got absolutely hammered by France. So the expectation would be that Ireland also beat Japan this weekend. And maybe this is all working out a bit nicely for them. Get that awful hard game out of the way. Get that arm wrestle and then find a bit of confidence. Get your, you know, hit your straps against Japan, and that sets you up for this crunch clash against France in the last game.
Yeah, no, you're right. No, they'll be dying for it. They'll be dying to get back in the pitch. And I suppose the thing is that you're right, there's a quick turnaround, but you train for it. You know what I mean? Like they'll have played previous in their kind of mock friendlies, they would have played in 3-day turnarounds in order to recreate what the stresses will have been in this World Cup, and that's quite normal. We've never played any different, so that will be kind of a tick in the box. That's a norm. And but you're right, definitely they'll want to just get back on the pitch and right the wrongs of Wednesday, to be honest.
Do you make changes? Do you rest players? Do you try and ease some people in to give them a bit of experience in this game? Like, how, if you're Tom Tierney, what are you doing to manage the squad?
Yeah, that's it. You know, and I think there's definitely a good few things that went wrong on Wednesday night, and the girls tried their best, probably a little bit late, but tried to self-correct, and, you know, but they did obviously to get the win. But from a selection point of view, I think based on having watched the Japanese game v France, Japan are quite small. They're very, very agile. They're very, very structured, but they are a little bit naive from a rugby point of view, just a slight little bit. So there's loads of things that we can exploit, that Ireland can exploit from the point of view. You know, we have some big hard up runners who we'd probably use to exploit that. And they'll want to correct what happened, what went wrong in the scrums, because our platform wasn't hugely stable, which just rocked, I think, the whole team. And the substitutes made a huge difference there. Do you start with Ciara Griffin? Do you start with Sophie Spence? I'm sure that's a conundrum that Tom will be trying to get his head around over the next while. And then probably just a little bit about just being way tidier with basic handling errors, you know, but I think that's more jitters and probably a little bit more tactical kicking by Nora to put you into better positions on the pitch, I'd imagine.
Yeah, okay, so some tweaks to the game plan, obviously, which you would do anyway, given the opposition, but not wholesale changes, maybe two or three would be max what you'd expect?
I'd imagine so, Jerry, yeah. There is a huge element. What we learned from Marc Rousset in 2014 is that we hadn't got the depth to be able to endure five games,
yeah.
And as a result we ran out a little bit of steam in the semi-finals. It is a 20-man squad or 28-man squad tournament, and you would want to use your bench. At the same time, I think Ireland's confidence is key to get them back on track, so he'll probably choose to try and correct what went wrong from a tactical point of view, and therefore opposed to select on rotation. Yeah,
like, because obviously this is your chance. You're not going to be resting players in the France game, because it's like everything is on the line in the France game, it looks like, unless Australia do us a favour and beat them, which isn't beyond the bounds of possibility, but it's unlikely at this stage.
True.
Right?
Yeah, do you know what? Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because you focus so much on that, like, August 17th game, but you're right, Australia could pull one over, couldn't they, on the French. And both of them are playing well. Like, the French played exceptionally well, obviously, against Japan. But the Aussies have the potential. I think they're going to get better and better throughout the tournament. They'll probably have three really, really good games in them. So I suppose a lot remains to be seen.
What about the rest of the teams that we've seen? I mean, like, I think the expectation pre-tournament was that England were going to be super strong, that New Zealand were also going to be really good. that maybe France were potentially the third best team in it and that we were kind of vying with them. And that's the big challenge for us. Is there anything else that you've seen for anybody? USA maybe not as impressive against Italy as maybe people had expected?
Yeah, Canada. Canada put 98 points on 98 points in Hong Kong. Yeah, 98 points in Hong Kong, which is a whopper of a score. So it'll be interesting to see. So what, Canada play New Zealand on the on August 17th as well, the same day, obviously, as France play Ireland. So those will be two humdingers. New Zealand as well. New Zealand is interesting. They're 44-12 against Wales. Looking back at their game, I was probably a little bit disappointed in their score. I thought they'd put more on Wales, but can be really, really tricky. And they seemed to be, Wales actually had way more possession as well. So I think they just kept on to ball. New Zealand found it really, really hard to get it. When they did get it, they did stuff with it. So I'll probably just remain to be seen literally on that August 17th. And we mentioned France. USA grew into the game, to be honest, and they actually probably started a weaker team, weaker in inverted commas. So they're a very, very strong team. And historically, they're similar to Australia in that they don't get much 15s game time and test game time between World Cups. And they do really, really well as they grow into tournaments. And they actually grew into even the game itself and produced some absolutely blinder tries in the second half. So they'll be an interesting one to watch too.
Yeah,
they'll probably struggle to get out of their pool though, because they're obviously in England's pool.
Yeah, and so England's still the favourites?
England, Canada, New Zealand would be favourites as it stands.
Your trio. Obviously, England, the RFU, have announced that the 15 squad won't be professional after the tournament, which is it's really disappointing that stuff like this is happening, and also that it's announced pre-tournament, because it kind of hangs over that squad. I mean, obviously they can use it as a motivation, but are you worried about the future of the 15s game, that there is definitely this move towards making sevens the platform for women's rugby as opposed to the 15s game?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's constantly evolving. Like, I see a huge place for both, and I see them being quite different from the point of view of sevens is an excellent game, 15s is an excellent game, and we know that sevens is skyrocketing to a platform, but it's coming from a different starting point. It's coming from a really, really low starting point, and suddenly it's just like Olympics, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas 15s is obviously coming from, it's been there, it's part of heritage, it's deeply rooted, and as a result, it's probably going to grow a little bit slower. The RFU's announcement, the girls, yeah, it's a little bit controversial. They've invested lots in the domestic rugby and the club scene, which is a whopper of an investment, like the 150 grand per team, matched by the RFU themselves. They're gone 50-50 with the team. So they're investing lots in the domestic game to make way, way, way more players way better, which ultimately they literally go route one into the English team. So that's a huge investment in 15s in itself. But yet they're extracting funding to go into the sevens for next year because of Commonwealth Games. Like, ultimately, you want to see both happening. But I suppose there just needs to be a little bit more investment. And I suppose what they're looking for is more external investment to be able to fuel both. And so a lot remains to be seen. I think there's a lot going on in the background with World Rugby to be able to grow both games. Like, yeah. I have faith in that. But equally, then you rely on the unions to believe in that too, and to drive their own domestic game, you know, on both sides.
Yeah, and they need the support of big brands and media companies. And it was, I think the figures for the first week were pretty interesting. Everybody's saying that the number of engagements across all of the platforms has been really good and very strong for the first week of a tournament. So there's clear growth, yeah. And there's a product to sell.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, personally, I know this, I'm an easy sell here, but I think it's a complete no-brainer. You know, after we'd won the Grand Slam in 2013, Aon came on board. And I think that was just a simple decision by one or two guys, and Cullum Diamond came on board, and he attached the Aon name to Ireland, and that has been absolutely phenomenal. And that was just like one man's decision or a couple of guys' decisions. I think the investment potential is huge in the 15th games and in the 7th games. And you can see in England already that they've started to gather some sponsors for their club side based on what you just described there, the new league structure. So I think there's huge, huge, huge investment potential and platforms for big companies and corporates to jump on board. So fingers crossed, remains to be seen.
Japan are obviously beaten 50 points by France. What should we beat them on Sunday? It's a tricky question, I know. not to put a gun to the head of your teammates, former teammates, but what do you expect?
Like, answer. Okay, let's say 42-10.
Okay, yeah, and you'd be happy enough if there's like a trend in performance that leads to everybody feeling a bit more confident ahead of the France game.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, certainly.
All right. Good stuff, Lynn. Thanks a million.
Okay, no worries at all.
It's Lynn Cantwell there giving us her thoughts on what's going on so far in the Rugby World Cup and Ireland's chances against Japan. We will beat Japan on Sunday. That one is in the Belfield Bowl, I think is the correct name of it. It's the UCD Bowl at 5:15 on Sunday. That one kicking off there. All right, that's your lot for Off the Ball on News Talk this week. Just time for me to tell you what's coming up on Now That's What I Call Sport on 98FM on Sunday morning. Johnny Sexton's going to talk about how pre-season has been going from his perspective so far, and we'll also begin our build-up to the All-Ireland Football Final, semi-final rather, between Dublin and Tyrone. Charlie Redmond, Keanu Sullivan and Tyrone's Matty Donnelly will all feature. That's at 9 o'clock on 98FM on Sunday morning. That is our lot tonight, though. Stay tuned for more updates from Will from the football and the golf. Splunk is up next. Ewa.
Off the Ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.